The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And welcome back to Scarred for Life, the podcast where we open up old wounds by looking back at the films that scared us as kids. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth.
And each episode, our special guest or guests bring with them a movie that traumatized them as a child.
Coolest thing ever, y'all. This week, our guests are Brad and Fiona Dourif. They star in Don Mancini's Child Play franchise and the Chucky TV series, which is currently airing its third season. Welcome to the damn show, y'all. This is so cool.
Hi, guys. Happy Howdy. To be here.
We're so excited. And what a, I have to say that this season of Chucky is wild.
How does it keep getting wilder? I don't understand. Yeah.
Isn't it batshit? I mean, I think it's Don Mancini. Every time I read a new concept, I'm like, really? You think he can pull that off? And then he does it.
And then he does. I was wondering, particularly for you, Fiona, because like your character he has done some shit to your character of Mika. What is it like when you get these scripts? You're just like, what the hell? Or how do you handle that?
Yeah, the running joke is next season I'll be a head in a jar, or like a decapitated torso, kind of like, you know, rolling down a hill or something. Yeah, you know, when he first pitched the finale of season one, which was, you know, Jennifer Tilly kidnapping me and then chopping off my arms and legs. There was such joy in his voice because it was such a shocking and good idea. I was like, yeah, that's amazing. We have to do it. And part of me was like, I'm going to be very expensive. I'm going to be a very expensive character now. But
yeah,
it's his fault. So you're just there.
It was a great idea, though. So creepy.
Also, so without kind of spoiling anything, there is a moment where you both are kind of acting on screen together as different iterations of Charles Lee Ray. And I'm trying to remember, is this the first time you both have been like physically on screen together for that?
Okay. Yes.
What was that like?
I've been asked this question, so I here's my answer. When Fiona first started out, she and I auditioned together a lot. Anytime I had an audition, she read with me, and anytime she had one, I read with her. So, you know, once I got over the nerves and started doing it, I really felt like, you know, I was back in my living room, you know, and it felt very familiar and safe and great.
I love that. That's so cool. What a cool relationship y'all have. Just like from the outside, seeing how it's like evolved and changed just in the Child's Play series at all. Like, it's just neat. It's just neat.
Yeah. It's all adorable. I must say it's pretty adorable. Yeah.
It is pretty adorable.
I mean, it feels that way even to us. I was nervous to do the scene finally. We've never been on screen together. And then as soon as we started doing it, it was just fun because I was looking at this person that I trust a lot. So,
yeah,
it felt personal and lovely. And like we were very lucky to be able to do something like this, to be part of the same franchise. And also at the end to have people dig it. It just feels very lucky to me.
And people loved last night's show, by the way.
Yeah.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Amazing.
Can't beat that. Yes. It's actually, you can't beat that, can you?
No.
100%
I don't think they've gotten extra credit yet, so I think you are. You're at it. Wait, but that's like, we've talked about the film and stuff on the show before, and you guys are really part of one of the most consistent franchises in horror, and I think that is so rad to like see how this has changed so much, but still is Don Mancini's weird brainchild. And for both of you, I mean, you've been a part of it for so long. What has it been like to see, and I guess with Brad, you especially, like, what has it been like to see this character and this franchise evolve so much and end up where it is right now?
You know, the horror is an event. You know, it is different from, I mean, as a franchise, I mean, it used to be Hammer Films, Dracula, everything taking is being falling over to be spooky until Dr. Fibes, and then it became campy. And that's what Chucky was born out of. And, you know, Chucky has to be taken seriously in one sense, but also he has to be, you know, he has to be campy. But the thing is genres change. And the thing that my reaction is, I have just been in awe of the way that Don has adjusted the series to go with whatever change the series is in. Became self-referential. And what does he do? He does Bride, and he references Bride of Frankenstein becomes part of that movie. Actually, becomes part of and informs and has a lot to do with plot on Bride of Chucky. So, and then, you know, for Curse starting with Curse, you know, everybody was going back to, you know, their roots. That was the kind of that was the era of that. And so he does Curse, which all takes place in a house, and it's a prequel, and it's, you know, it goes back. He's doing the first one again in a way. Yeah. It's going back to its roots. So how I feel about it is, I'm just in awe of Don. That's how I feel about it.
Hell yeah. I mean, how could you not be in awe of Don?
He's so cool. I mean, he's everybody's tried to adjust, but he just did it better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, damn. I mean, you kind of went a little bit through the history of Chucky with like Bride of Chucky and the Curse in particular, which I love Curse in particular because it reminds me of sort of a Hammer film with like this gothic house, and it's very like central located, and it's spooky even without the murderous doll in there. But what I love is that every single time we see a new iteration of this, we're kind of tackling either different genres, or we're going into different places. And I'm curious, we've gone to the White House this season. Is there any place you guys would love to see Chucky head to next?
Where if we get a fourth season,
don't say anything, Durif. You're not allowed to. I'm so sorry.
I'm not going to. Okay. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say, yeah, your wish will come true if we get another season.
I feel like each Don is really good at reinventing it.
Yes.
And I think he follows trends, but also he kind of makes them too. Especially with Child's Play 1, I mean, like a moving talking puppet like that. And there's so many franchises that copy it at this point. It's really, you know, impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, we know the pitch for season 4, should we get it? And I think it's the best one yet. Sorry, I have a police event happening outside of my house right now.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
You're okay.
They're coming to get you, sweetie.
I think they might be coming to get me.
First ever live podcast arrest. I can't wait.
In Europe, no less. Yeah.
Ooh. Wild. So I am also curious because for you, Fiona, you have to, when you're playing Charles Lee Ray, or when you're playing Nika, who's been possessed at one point, you have to like have the mannerisms of Brad and Chucky down it. And I'm the laugh and everything. How do you guys practice that? How much did you have to practice to get that down?
Well, there's actually very little footage of Charles Lee Ray. So yeah. It ended up not being able to be a mimic because there's three scenes that exist, and that is right. it. I had conversations with my dad about how he thinks Charles Lee Ray, what makes him tick, how he thinks he is. And then it ended up sort of being my own. Apparently, Don had the idea to have me play young Charles because my forehead and eyes look like my father, which I guess I kind of see. And then I have this loud cackle guffaw that is my natural laugh that I think sounds like a version of Chucky. And so when he pitched me that idea, I just thought it wasn't going to work. I didn't think it was going to work. But I was like, all right, I'll try it. And then we did the camera test. And it was pretty weird. I sat down in a chair with, Tennille Shoki and Francois. Forgive me, Francois, for not being able to pronounce your French name correctly, but I think it's Dejeuner. Anyway, they're Mind Warp FX out of Toronto. They do the heavy lifting for young Charles. I mean, people give me a lot of credit, but really it's them. Anyway, it takes 3.5 hours, and I look in the mirror after, and yeah, I mean, I kind of look like Tim. And I remember quit smoking at the time, and I smoked a cigarette. I had so many mixed emotions, and I didn't know what I was feeling was another thing. Usually I think I'm somewhat self-aware, and I was like, I don't know what's going on.
I mean, it has to be weird.
It was weird.
It has to be a weird experience.
It was weird. I mean, yeah, it was weird. I also think
Chucky is one of your early traumatic experiences. Tell them of your arrival at the studio while I was doing ADR.
I'm curious if what you remember of it. Can you tell the story?
Well, I wasn't, I didn't know about it until was Chucky when Chucky was being burned alive. He gets caught in the fireplace and then he burns and he runs around for it felt like a long time. I think it was a couple, maybe a minute and a half, some ridiculous amount of time, screaming his head off until he just burns out completely and dies. So I was like screaming like I was dying is the bottom line. And Fiona happened to come in at that point and turn around and was terrified and took off running.
Oh no.
And we had to go find her. And she was not in the building. She had gone around, in those days there were these huge places where there were these wall to ceiling tape recorders, and that's how it was done, how ADR mixes were done. And she was hiding in one of those, and we got her, and I said, "Hey, I'm acting, and it's all okay. I'm fine." But anyway, so yeah.
How old were you, Fiona?
Oh, I think I was six.
Seven.
Oh no,
seven, yeah,
six or seven, yeah, something like that. I'm pretty sure I remember it, but often I feel like we fabricate memories, but my dad remembers it too. And then also I have a vague memory of being at the premiere in 88.
But that was okay because I knew that there was no way she was staying in that theater. That was not going to happen. So I brought her in and sat her down and we were beside each other. It started, she got up and I got up. And we both sat in the outside in the lobby.
So we have to admit something to you, guys, that both of the Dourifs get really scared in horror films.
Okay.
I love that. That's so good.
I was going to ask what it was like being a kid when your dad is a famous horror movie star. And so, I'm wondering if was Brad very loose and letting you watch stuff, or did he make sure that you didn't see all of his films, or do you remember
do I remember
how free he was? Or either of you, really.
Okay. Before she says what she says, they both kids were not allowed to watch a lot of movies that I was in.
Yeah.
Because I thought that a lot of them were scary but I don't think that held because that was the era of VCRs and they just went to other kids' houses and saw whatever they wanted to. I found out.
That's what I did too.
Well, I had an older sister who was super cool, Christina, and she could watch all the horror films and she would show me them. And I would try to hang, you know, she was 5 years older. And then I would just like shut my eyes so that maybe the kids couldn't tell that I wasn't watching. You know, I was like a dork. I watched Little Mermaid over and over, you know.
Me too. Me too. That was like, that was a favorite of mine.
I really liked Little Mermaid. But I,
yours was My Little Pony.
Oh,
you watched that once a day, at least.
Dad, I'm trying to sound cool. We're on a horror podcast. But I'll say one thing. People ask me all the time, what was it like growing up as like the kid of Chucky? And the deal is, my dad is like the least Hollywood person you could imagine.
Yeah.
I have no concept of him really as a famous person, you know. We got to go on cool vacations sometimes, and I've been around sets. I've been on sets since I was a kid. But when I was first cast in Child's Play, when I was first cast and we had finished shooting Cults of Chucky, I remember it was 2013, I think. It was when Instagram was just coming out or just getting bigger. And I posted a picture of a CD to like the whatever few thousand people that followed me. And like 50 outlets picked it up. And all of a sudden this like swarm of attention came because Chucky is such a big deal. And I didn't understand. It was always this very personal kind of funny thing about me where, you know, kids in high school thought I was a little cooler because my dad was Chucky. It was basically my entire relationship to it. And now I've been a part of the franchise for you know, over a decade, and it's pretty zeitgeisty, and it feels like this weird lottery I won because it's really fun to make. And then at the end of it, people really like it and I get paid to do it. It just feels like, it feels like neat. A gift, man. Yeah. I really love it.
Hell yeah. All right. So we should move on to your pick, but I have a very quick question for Brad about not Chucky, but this is about you playing Wormtongue in Two Towers. There is a shot where you have a soul tear running down your face. Did you improv that to have that tear running down your face when you see Saruman's army?
That was now I've forgotten her name. Damn it. A suggestion by Pete's wife. She said it would be great if we had a tear running down, you know, and I'm, you know, one tear on demand, you know, but I mean, I agreed. Of course that made sense.
Wait, did and you do course, the one tear?
It just happened.
Amazing.
She suggested it, and the suggestion was enough.
Oh yeah, that's so awesome. Cool. I just loved your performance in that movie, so I had to ask one question. A lot of my friends were very excited that I was talking to Wormtongue. Not Chucky, it's Wormtongue. The Lord of the Rings nerds are very excited over here, so yeah. Okay, anyway, moving on from Wormtongue, Fiona, what movie did you bring with you today for us to discuss?
I brought with me Grimm Prairie Tales from, I believe, 1990.
So for anyone who's not familiar, Grimm Prairie Tales is, in fact, a 1990 horror anthology where a cynical bounty hunter and a clerk, played, so happens, by Brad Dourif, traveling through the prairie, and they rest by the campfire, telling four stories of terror to each other.
So when we found out that this was your pick, Fiona, I was so excited because this has never been done on the podcast before, where we have someone that has been in the movie that traumatized you. And I'm just, we sort of talked about your experience on Child's Play and running and screaming. And I'm curious, why is this your pick? And how did you see it? Why is this your horror story? I want to hear everything.
Okay. You said 94 it came 90. Out? 90. 1990. Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So I saw it when I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
9 or 10. And my dad became very good friends with the producers of this movie, Richard and Shirley Hahn. And they thought it was, I'm like, it's a campfire Western movie with my dad and James Earl Jones, who has this cool voice. I'll watch it. And there is a scene in Grim Fairy Tales that culminates. It's like four or five stories. Do you remember, Dad?
Yep.
Four or five stories. Yeah. And one of the stories ends with my father buried alive and him in this kind
of... It wasn't me, but go ahead.
It was you. Wasn't it you?
No, it was not me.
It's you.
No.
It wasn't me.
Maybe
I just
thought
watched it last night.
But it wasn't me.
That's amazing.
I was telling the story. No. James Earl Jones was telling the story.
James Earl Jones was telling the story. So there, I have that image so clear in my little... in my child head, and I had reoccurring dreams of my dad buried under the ground in graves. And I saw recently, this isn't going to work because I'm not going to remember the name of the film, but the really scary, I think Swedish movie that has the end scene of the guy being buried alive. I'll look it up.
Are you talking about Speak No Evil?
No, it's not Speak No Evil. No, it's from the 90s. It's
The Vanishing.
I saw the Vanishing.
So fucked up.
Fucked up and feels true. Anyway, Grim Fairy Tales, that particular scene, which in my head was my father. I can't believe it wasn't. I should have rewatched it as an adult, but I'm too scared.
But I love that story. I love that.
I dreamt about it. I still can't think about it. I'm scared of that particular way of dying, of waiting to die. Like,
yes.
I mean, that's right? A horrible way to die. And I can only imagine if your kid was inflating that with your dad, like that's trauma. That's trauma.
Fucked up. Totally fucked up. Thank you guys very much. Dad, do you remember that movie? How well do you remember that movie?
I remember it very well. I cut it because it wasn't working. James and I shot for about a quarter of a day. And it wasn't working. So I cut it so that it would. And it did.
You edited it?
I edited a lot of dialogue out. I said,
"Oh wow!"
The reason why it's stopping is because, it's these things are getting in the way, and if we cut them, it'll work. And it did. It worked great. And James, I mean, I thought his performance in that is one of the best performances I've ever seen him do. Frankly, I mean, I just thought. And he came up with the thing that people don't know. James always had this important voice. But the thing of it is, when he grew up, he was a very earthy guy. I mean, he worked in a slaughterhouse when he was a kid. When he was in the army, I think he was an expert in mountain terrain. So he would train troops to, how to be in mountain terrain. So he's just very earthy, and this part fit him like a glove. I mean, he was at home, and he did such brilliant stuff. I mean, he went out, fired a gun, and then put his mouth over the bear, and then that's when he had his idea.
Wow.
That's so cool.
For the best story, I mean, he just came up with all kinds. And I remember when we were doing the thing, and I was watching him do this stuff, and I was going, this guy is great. This guy is really, really free and good.
That's so cool. Well, you guys get to play a lot. It? I feel like.
Sorry.
What?
Where did you shoot it?
We shot it, outside of L.A., Just outside of L.A. and, out in the prairie.
It's out in the prairie, out in the desert. I forget how much desert is around LA, like when you leave, and how much it is just desert.
You know, there, it depends on where you go. It depends on where you go.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it is, you know, I mean, I, you know, there's a mountain up there that's 800 feet and 8,000 feet. No, I don't know. It's very, very high. And and I mean, unless you have copper pot, you can't boil water there.
Wow.
Can I ask you guys a question? Was Grim Prairie Girl scary? It's not, is it?
No, not really.
It's not, because it's like, it's an anthology film that like has like, you know, you have the vibe of like a creep show or something of like telling the stories, but they're weird stories and they're creepy, but I don't think they're scary.
No, they're not.
The
idea was that it was a contest that they kind of each felt like they should tell the best story.
Yeah.
And they started talking about stories and what makes a story work and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because your character asks for horror stories. So James Earl Jones is like upping the ante with the horror stories. And you had
yours. And then I would tell one, and then he would tell one. And
Yeah. Which again, it is like campfire stories. But I mean, like, you know, that involve murder and a guy getting sucked inside of a woman's vagina, which is my favorite story. Do you remember that, Fiona? Do you remember that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah? Oh my God, it's my favorite one. I'm obsessed with this.
I watched this last night to prepare, and I'll tell you, I thought I had never seen this movie before, but the moment we get to the segment in which this demon woman who looks like she's pregnant for the most of it, and then like they wake up in the middle of the night and she is kind of being seductive to the guy that is sharing the campfire with her, and basically, oh, you're such a good guy, and he kind of comes on to her, and then they start having sex, and then his body literally like folds up and gets sucked inside her. That unlocked a core memory for me that I must have saw. I don't know how. My dad loved like Westerns. So I don't know if he rented this on like VHS and I came downstairs at a certain moment and saw that. But I have this moment and it has lingered in my mind for years of me walking downstairs, seeing some man getting sucked up inside. I would have been like 10 or so at the time, because I was born in 81. So it had to be like 9 or 10, maybe 11 when I saw it. But I have this memory of walking downstairs and then turning around and walking back up, because I was like, this is not for me. But it has haunted me for all these years, because all I've seen is that moment. And when I saw it, it was like my stomach just dropped and was like, oh shit, this is that movie.
Yeah,
wow. That's amazing.
So me and you are exactly the same age. And I'm 81. And I'm having exactly the same experience, which is I have like flashes of traumatizing images from the movie, but clearly I don't remember it well. And yeah, that image of it's a succubus, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure that's been around in other films, but I think it was my introduction.
That's not generally how a succubus works, but
tell us, how does a succubus work? Or don't
talk
about.
Well, no, succubuses suck life force. They don't physically suck bodies completely. This one did. So it was a different. It was its own thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Indians buried people alive, and I don't. I mean, they probably did, but not in that way. They didn't sneak up and build a great big dome over somebody.
Yeah, that's my favorite one, especially with the effects. And I just, you know, we don't have enough movies where this happens, and I feel like we need more movies where men are sucked up into women. I think that's just
get back to where
a natural progression of the horror genre. I know, exactly. Go back to from whence you came. Tell Dawn to include that. I don't know how in Child's Play, but somehow
figure it out.
Come on, weirder things have happened to you in that show. Sorry.
I mean, Chucky had a baby, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Anything can fucking happen, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wait. So, did you, Fiona? Were you allowed to watch this one? Did you sneak this one? Like, how did you? Because how did you watch this one? Was this
sneaky? Yeah. So I fully blame my father for this, you know, traumatic event, because I'm absolutely positive that they thought it was okay for me to watch it. Like, I think that I was
okay
to watch this one, and that's why. And that's why I did. And I actually can't get over the fact that it wasn't my dad, Barry.
So fucking
I'm so
funny.
Old now, and I still thought it was him. Crazy.
I mean, you know, I know that feeling too, where, you know, you see something as a kid, particularly around that age, and you've just built up like this thought in your head that becomes the truth. Cause I've seen a bunch of movies that I thought played out one way that I saw as a kid, and rewatching the adult, like, this is not my memory whatsoever. I think it's so interesting the way memory is so fallible, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are people who went to jail because somebody, you know, saw them and it's totally wrong. They didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had DNA evidence and cleared them. And the person is still, in one case, the person was still dead sure it really felt like him. And what happened was, is, you know, she saw him in a courtroom and made it up. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the face. And that from that moment on, it became the face. So we are creative. Memory is creative.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really don't like being underground. Also, that was another consequence of me making up a memory of this movie.
So this movie has truly affected you into adulthood.
Yeah, yeah. The image that I have in my mind is something that occurs to me in dreams still to this day. I mean,
fucking way. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Isn't it wild how movies affect us? Like, even when you see them as kids and the way they still, like, it's, especially doing this podcast, like, it's crazy how much. Not even a horror, like any movie can just like imprint in our brains. It's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. The pyre I remember, and then him trying to get out. And my once again, my much cooler older sister, 5 years older, had no fear of anything. She could watch anything. And she would, do you guys remember the Surgery Channel in the 80s? That was a thing.
No.
Yeah. It, like late night, there was a channel that would play surgeries.
What?
And she at one point called me in and had me watch an eye. I think they were straightening
the
retina.
Who called you in?
Christina. And had me watch.
I want to shoot her.
I mean, she shouldn't have been watching either. And had a pupil being straightened in an eyeball.
Oh my God. I would not be able to handle that now as an adult. I can't do any of that.
Yeah, yeah. I know we're not as cool as Christina Dourif. It's true.
I know.
To this day, she's still watching eye surgery videos on YouTube.
If she wanted to, she could handle it, man. Nobody else could, but she could.
Wow. That's so incredible. I am curious, Brad, from your perspective, how was it filming? Because, like, I'll be honest, my favorite parts of this movie, watching it as an adult, is the conversation between you and James Earl Jones that plays throughout the film. What was that like acting against him? Because you guys seem to have a little bit different of acting styles. And I'm curious how that all kind of came together.
You know, at first, I mean, you know, it was a lot of words. And I was better prepared than James was. But he, you know, he was... working a lot more than I was because he was James Earl Jones. And the second day that, you know, when he started to catch fire, I was like in awe. I mean, it was nothing but, you know, he took off flying and took me for a ride, and I had a blast.
I mean, you guys have a lot of chemistry on screen.
I don't know what to say, but I thought we did have chemistry in that thing.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Well, anthology films are so hard with, like, the wraparound. And, like, I feel like everyone always criticizes the wraparound. But the wraparound, and this one's the best part. Like, I just love the way y'all bantered and yelled at each other. And, like, your character, especially Brad, gets more confident. And watching that confidence build was really cool as it progresses.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, he gets more confident when he realizes he actually likes the guy.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's a really cool anthology film that I'd never heard of. So it was cool to, like, watch a Western, a horror Western anthology. Like, more people should talk about it, I think.
To be clear, it is horror, right? I didn't make that part up.
Oh, okay, yes. No, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of murder in it,
horror,
for sure.
Yeah.
It's considered horror. It's not, like, super scary but it's still horror. I mean, a guy gets sucked into a woman's vagina. Like, that's pretty horror, you know? Like, no.
Is it? No. Yeah. Maybe I do have to watch it. Should I rewatch it? Was it good?
Yeah.
I had a good time watching it. I had a good time.
I think, as I remember it, it was one of my more relaxed performances.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that. It's hard to find. It's only on YouTube right now. So we watched it on YouTube. The quality isn't great because it's a YouTube
video. It
looked
like a VHS kind of rip because I don't believe it's ever been released on DVD or anything. So it was difficult to track down, I will say. And I think this is a movie that deserves to have a reappreciation now. Like, you know how Vinegar Syndrome or some of those boutique labels will take a movie and restore it. I would love to see a restoration of this film, to be perfectly honest, because I had a great time with it. It was just really dark and grainy, so it's kind of hard to see sometimes what was going on because of the low quality of the rip. But man,
is there a chance then that it was Brad Dourif being buried alive and you just couldn't tell?
No, it was definitely,
I don't know. It's not. I'm so sorry.
No. I believe... just kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you.
Neither James nor I were in any of the stories.
Yeah, I believe.
Why didn't you let me watch it?
Because I didn't think it was scary. And I actually, Fiona, I don't remember. To tell you the truth, I have no recollection of. I mean, one thing is for sure. When your mom and I would discuss these things, bottom line, I would say to myself, well, that just means I'll spend I'll be in the lobby with Fiona. You know, because there was no way that you were ever going to stay in the theater if you found something too scary.
I know. I'm a little slightly cooler now, but not much. I remember I was on a half date to see the remake of The Evil Dead. I saw a midnight showing of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I sat next to a friend of mine and kept my eyes closed from the fucking start of the movie till the end and was just hoping that he didn't notice.
Yeah, I've spent probably more time in bathrooms in theaters than anybody else. You know, it just because I was too embarrassed to stay in the lobby. Because everybody would know I was there because I couldn't watch the movie. Oh. So, yeah, I'm with you, Fiona.
That's incredible. I love it. You're such like a horror iconic face. And I love that you sit in the bathroom. That brings me joy.
My dad's an innocent. It's true. It's a really principled.
I'm guilty of a lot of things, darling.
Oh, I don't know them. So if that's true.
Okay, good.
There's a we'll lot of things I don't way. Know.
But Brad, we'll I want to know real way. Quick. What's the movie that scarred you for life, Brad? What's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Tell you the honest to God truth, I never stuck around long enough. I remember. I was, and when I was early in adulthood, I went and saw what was the first big zombie movie that was really Night of the Living Dead. And just the shot of the car, of the title sequence of the car going down that lonely road in black and white, I was done. Okay. At that point, I was completely finished. That was an amazing, because the acting in a great deal of that was so bad that it was just, and some of the dialogue was beyond belief how bad it was, but the movie was still terrifying because of how brilliantly it was shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you stayed for the whole thing?
What?
You stayed for the whole thing?
No, I saw it later. Later I saw it because I could stop it. I saw it on DCR and moved it forward and back. That was the point when I became kind of interested in film. And I just wanted to see what it was.
Cool. Oh. That's awesome. All right. We have to wrap up. Fiona, I won't have you break this one because I love that you already gave us your memories of it. And I will just keep that as our ending of not remembering and thinking it was your dad. An incredible story.
Amazing.
And she never goes into a basement again.
Yeah. I mean, fair. They're bad places to be, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you both so, so much. This was such a joy. Are you guys active on social media? Do you have a presence? If so, can you let our listeners? Okay.
I don't at all, because it's too complicated. And I don't like, I mean, people have forgotten how to treat one another since that's happened.
Yeah.
I agree.
I do not want to be a part of that.
I don't blame you. One bit.
I'm on Instagram at Fiona Dourif, and is it X now? X at Fiona Dourif, the same. I don't use it much because, again, I think it makes people unhappy, but including myself. But I'm on it, and I check it maybe once every couple weeks and post new stuff when it comes out. So
cool. Yeah. Well, listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. You can follow us on social media. I'm at MB McAndrews on Twitter and at MB.McAndrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful everywhere.
And please don't forget to follow the podcast on social media, at Scarred Podcast on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Scarred Podcast, Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And make sure to check out Chucky, because this, I'll tell you, the next two episodes of this are wild. And I need to know where it's going to go next, because you two were not helpful.
Thank you, Derek Pryor, for artwork. Thank you to John Kelly.
You know, trust me, if it goes, you're going to be knocked off your feet. It's going to be great.
Hell yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. And most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.